You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm Lee Keller, joined by John Kah. In this offseason episode, we will give our 2024 Fantasy Awards out, talk about who we think will win the actual awards for the season, and take turns drafting the first two rounds for fantasy baseball in 2025. Before we do all of that, John, my Mets are on some sort of miracle run, and it is so exciting to watch. I am sorry about your Twins, but man, these Mets look like a force to be reckoned with. How's everything going with you? Are you enjoying any baseball right now for the postseason?
I've been watching the games, kind of enjoying not really having too much of a rooting interest in what's going on. I would say I'm enjoying what the Mets are doing. It's pretty cool what's going on there. I think with the American League, it's kind of weird because it's three AL Central teams and the Yankees. So it's like there's literally no one I can root for in that scenario. Yeah. Yeah, I'm going full NL this year. I don't care who comes out of the NL, if it's the Dodgers, if it's the Mets, if it's the Padres. I'm just going to be rooted for that team over whoever makes it out of the American League. So, it's been a really exciting playoff series. And it's always weird with the playoffs because sometimes it feels like, you know, like the good teams, so to speak, don't always move ahead, right? We saw that with kind of the wild card series in the American League where both the top seeds lost. We saw that with, like, you know, Philly just getting overblown by the Mets juggernaut. It's always interesting, the chaos of October baseball.
Yeah. You really never know who is going to make it through. And I was talking to my dad about everything and I was like, you know, the best team rarely ever wins. You know what I mean? You could put the best team possible on paper and they won't always win. And it's wild to think that, like, sure, there were stretches in periods of time where the Big Red Machine, they went on a run, obviously one of the better teams around, the Yankees, of course. Like, there's been some historic teams that were the best on paper and ended up winning the whole thing, but man, rarely ever nowadays does the best team win. Like, we saw the Nationals win when they had no business at all sniffing the World Series, and they ended up winning it all. Like, we see these miracle runs more so than not. So why not the Mets this year? Why not the Tigers this year? You know, like, it's remarkable to see the Orioles go down, to see the Astros go down, then to see the Phillies go down. Like, all of these juggernaut teams that we just saw that dominated their divisions pretty much, just getting eliminated by a team that happens to be hot at the right time. And I guess that's the story of the postseason, right? Like, this postseason's actually been fantastic. I obviously have a vested interest being a Mets fan, but overall, I'm way more excited about this postseason than I was last year. For some reason, last year didn't hit as hard as it did this year, I would say.
I mean, it was an interesting season for me, obviously, with the Twins finally getting the monkey off their back and winning the playoffs, the playoff series. So that was pretty big for us. But it does seem like a little bit more, I don't know if the term is like star-studded this time around. Like, all the good teams are, like, their stars are showing out, right? We saw John Carlos Stanton, for some reason, has, like, found a second gear.
Yeah, he's only good in the playoffs.
Yeah, for some reason. You know, seeing these huge hits from, like, Pete Alonso, that's been really cool. Obviously, you know, Jackson Churio just being beside himself when Milwaukee lost. Like, he was a, you know, a big part of why they were able to succeed so much this season. I don't know, it feels like this, and you got Shohei Ohtani, obviously,
of course,
in LA too. So there's a lot of fun storylines where, like, the stars are, like, really doing well. There seems to be, like, a little bit more, like, animosity between teams this time around. Like, maybe it means more a little bit, but I kind of see what you're talking about. It does feel like the storylines this year are a little more interesting.
Yeah, I would agree with that completely. The storylines are there. I mean, there's a possible chance of a Subway Series. And just let's say the Guardians beat the Tigers and the Dodgers beat the Padres, right? The four teams left are the Mets, the Yankees, the Dodgers, and the Guardians. Those are four really great teams. Mm-hmm. So that is a really, really good playoff scenario where it's like, okay, these big four teams are competing. And maybe they weren't the favorites going in, but they certainly are the four best teams in the postseason, I would say. So it's pretty cool to see how this is unfolding. And like you said, the stars are showing themselves, right? Like Fernando Tatis is balling out for the Padres.
Yeah.
Shohei Ohtani and Mookie Betts are balling out for the Dodgers. Then you have the Mets, obviously Francisco Lindor, Mark Vientos, Pete Alonso. You have all these guys showing up. Then for the Yankees, obviously Giancarlo Stanton, like you mentioned, Aaron Judge and Juan Soto have kind of been a little lackluster, unfortunately. And Bobby Witt for the Royals has also been a little lackluster. So the next round, the Yankees have to show off with those guys, because if they don't, then they're going to get eliminated by either the Guardians or the Tigers. But it was disappointing to not see Bobby Witt go even crazier than he could.
I mean, did he get a single hit in the Yankee series? I can't remember. He did.
Yeah,
okay.
He did today, the day we're recording this, on the day they got eliminated. Yeah.
Right. You know what's also been really cool? A lot of good defense.
Great defense.
I think part of that, though, a little conspiracy here, I think it's because the wall in San Diego's a little short, which makes it a little easier to have these cool highlight, you know, robbing a home run plays, because it's like they're just reaching over and grabbing the ball. Like, you know, they're not like leaping.
You don't
two
have
feet
to scale
in the air.
A wall. You're just
exactly.
Kind of reaching back. Yeah.
It's a little easier to rob a homer in San Diego.
That is true.
A lot of great defense, which, I mean, obviously we're in a fantasy baseball podcast, so who cares about defense? But it's been, a lot of really cool plays just in the field and just seeing. Kind of the speed shown off from these teams, the arms that's being thrown off, that's being shown. And of course, the most annoying thing, maybe, or maybe the coolest thing, depends on how you feel about it, is just how, like, starting pitching, I feel like, is more or less like, who cares at this point? Like, we're used to the whole, like, hey, a starter maybe goes like 4 or 5 innings and then it's to the bullpen. But We've straight up had multiple teams have legitimate, like, success with bullpen games during the playoffs now. And it feels it's not going to be something that's sustainable throughout the entire regular season, because that's just not going to happen. But it does feel like this is becoming more the norm in the playoffs, where it's like we're going to have bullpen games and the teams aren't, it's not going to be like waving a white flag when you have a bullpen game. Like, you are still competing and legitimately having a chance to win in those games.
Yeah, the Tigers and the Dodgers both won bullpen games in the postseason. Like, that just doesn't make much sense, right? Like, starting pitching is an enigma. The Tigers rotation is literally Tariq Skubal and a dream. Like, that is
exactly
actual rotation. So it is pretty crazy to see, and it is wild, like you said, to see that unfolding the way it is. But, man, these playoffs are exciting. And before we move on, I just have to say, let's go Mets. But before we get into it, just a reminder that you can follow our podcast on Twitter at ThisWeekPL, and you can send us your fantasy baseball questions to our email at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. Lastly, make sure that you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform that you listen to your podcasts on. We're on all of them, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, everywhere else. So make sure you follow us if you enjoy listening to the show. And if you have the time, please leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy listening to the show. We would greatly appreciate it. Also, a quick note here is that we are now officially in the off-season schedule, which means we are going to be making an episode every 2 weeks. So basically, it's one off week, and then we upload, then one off week, then we upload. So that way you can keep up to date with what we're doing. Just remember, that's the schedule going forward. So there won't be one next week, but there will probably be one the week after that. So that is the off-season schedule, and that's what we're sticking to. But now it's time to get into the 2024 Fantasy Baseball Awards. Now, we're going to start with the three real awards first. We're going to talk about the MVP, the Cy Young, and the Rookie of the Year. And we are going to talk about our fantasy MVP, Cy Young, and Rookie of the Year, as well as the real life, who we think will win those awards. So we will start with the MVP award, the Most Valuable Player. John, who do you think is going to win that in the NL and the AL?
Yeah, we've talked about this on the pod, and you and I pretty much have the same opinion with this pick.
Yeah.
There is a little bit of fun sort of, hey, Francisco Lindor, maybe he's the NL MVP. But at the end of the day, I think I have to give it to Shohei Ohtani for the National League MVP and Aaron Judge for the American League MVP. Shohei was just a monster in pretty much in every single offensive category. You know, he was a couple points away from potentially getting the Triple Crown in the National League. Yes, he doesn't play any defense. Yes, he's not pitching. He's literally only offering value like four to five at-bats each game. But he makes so much with those at-bats that it's kind of impossible to not kind of put him up for as, you know, the most valuable player this season. And then when it comes to the AL, I mean, Aaron Judge, obviously 58 homers. It's hard to not think that that's amazing. The fact that he almost got the 60s is kind of crazy. His only real competition probably is Bobby Witt, who had a 30-30 season. Juan Soto's also kind of up there with 40 homers and, you know, had good average. But Aaron Judge was, like, a lot better than Juan Soto in average, a lot better in RBI as well, just being an offensive force. So it's kind of hard for me to not put either of those two as just the clear front runner for both of these awards.
Yeah, I have to agree with John on this one. I love Francisco Lindor. Obviously, he's my starting shortstop for the Mets, and I will always root for him, and he's one of my favorite players. And I think that there is no player more valuable to their team than Francisco Lindor is. That, in my opinion, means that he is the MVP, and he should win the MVP award. But if we're just going to talk about how the voters are going to vote, and because Ohtani did something that no one's ever done in the history of baseball, go 50-50, he's going to win the MVP. And rightfully so. I'm not trying to take anything away from him. I want Lindor to get his respect. I mean, he didn't even make the All-Star team this year, which is just downright disrespectful. I know he didn't start off great, but his defense and the way he picked it up towards the, I guess, latter half of the voting for the All-Star team, it's just despicable, honestly. I mean, he should have been an All-Star. But regardless, to me, no one is more valuable to their team than Francisco Lindor. But what Shohei Ohtani did this season is just unfathomable, right? Like, let me read off these stats. It's video game-like. So he played in 159 games, which is only three less than the maximum, of course. He was a DH, so yes, he didn't play the field, and he didn't pitch this year because he underwent Tommy John, but 54 home runs, 130 RBI, 134 runs scored, and 59 stolen bases, with a 310 batting average, 390 OBP, 646 slugging percentage, and a 1036 OPS. That is gross. Like, by all definitions, gross. That is a video game create a player type stat that you just can't make up. It is just unbelievable. I mean, literally 54 home runs, 59 stolen bases. He hit 50-50 with like a week to go in the season and then said, let's get 9 more stolen bases and 4 more home runs. Like, yeah. He could have won 60-60. It's just disgusting. Like, this guy is a freak and he deserves all of the awards. He's the most talented baseball player to ever grace the field, in my opinion. And it's just so impressive. So Shohei, clearly MVP. Francisco Lindor, you should be right there with him. And then for me, AL MVP, once again, Aaron Judge. It's pretty obvious. It's crazy that if Juan Soto was on a different team, I think he gets more votes. Mm-hmm. But because he was on the same team as Aaron Judge, it doesn't even look like he had a good year. You know what I mean? It's kind of like so undershadowed by what Judge did.
Yeah.
That you can't even give him his credit, which he deserves a lot of credit. I mean, he set a career high in home runs and he was just amazing. Soto is going to earn a big fat check this season, but Aaron Judge was on another planet. His competition, you mentioned Bobby Witt, but also not spoken about, Jose Ramirez. He could legitimately be an AL MVP as well. I mean, he pretty much single-handedly brought the Guardians into the playoffs. He almost went 40-40. He actually got robbed of going 40-40 because the last game of the season got canceled due to weather. So he was actually robbed of a game where if he hit a home run, he would have went 40-40. Instead, he ends with 39 home runs. Mm-hmm. But Jose Ramirez, remarkable. I mean, especially at third base, a position where he was by far the best player for fantasy, at least. So, yeah, shout out to Jose Ramirez. Incredible year. But I think it's obvious the two MVPs, AL Aaron Judge, NL Shohei Ohtani. So that is the MVP awards there. Shout out to all of the other potential winners. Moving on to the Cy Young Award. So, John, who do you think is going to win the Cy Young in the AL and NL? And also, do you think someone maybe was a fantasy Cy Young winner for you opposed to the real-life Cy Young?
Yeah, so I think the real-life Cy Youngs at this point, if you read my newsletter a couple weeks ago, you'll know that I'm pretty much sold on it being Tarik Skubal and Chris Sale. To me, there's no one else who was at their top of their game in terms of pitching this season besides those two. Chris Sale, obviously just a great story, in terms of being, more or less kind of a reclamation project for Atlanta. You know, basically was cast off from Boston and just really turned it around this season, was healthy for most of the year. It was a little unfortunate that, you know, he had the chance to pitch in the last game for Atlanta, ended up getting back spasms, then ended up missing the entire wildcard series, which was unfortunate. But yeah, great pitching from him. In terms of his numbers, you know, the ERA 2.79, his WHIP was 1.01. So really solid ratios there in terms of just, you know, straight hard numbers. 225 strikeouts. That's right behind Tarik Skubal, who had 228. 18 wins to also tie with Tarik Skubal for the lead among the National League and American League. Basically, yeah, Sale earned the National League MVP in real life. And if Tarik, I think there's not much more that needs to be said. He was phenomenal this season. His numbers were incredible across the charts. He did not have to deal with any sort of injury throughout the entire season. He's kind of, as we've mentioned, he's kind of the reason why Detroit is still alive in this playoffs. But if I was going to pick a fantasy Cy Young award winner, I think Zach Wheeler deserves some credit. His numbers are very similar to Chris Sale's. Didn't have as good of a K per nine, but that's because he pitched essentially 20 more innings. Even though he had one less strikeout, because he pitched 20 more innings, his ratios are a little bit worse. But again, completely reliable the entire season. 26 quality starts that led the majors, and he led it by a lot. The next closest is Seth Lugo with 22. There's actually a bunch of pitchers tied for 22, but Zach Wheeler far and ahead was just the most solid, consistent pitcher throughout the entire season. And in terms of fantasy stats, I think that plays a little bit more than Chris Sale. Zach Wheeler for me is my fantasy Cy Young.
Those are great picks, and I am going to piggyback on the real life side. I think Chris Sale and Tarik Skubal are the obvious options. I am not going to bore you with more stats because you pretty much said it all for both of them. The only thing I will say is they both won the pitching triple crown respectively in their division. So that's incredible. I mean, the fact that in each league, they both won the pitching triple crown, which is ERA, wins, and strikeouts for those who don't know. It's incredible. Both of them won it. And I don't think that's happened for a long, long time. So that is an impressive feat that there wasn't really any competition between them. And the only real argument you can make is Zach Wheeler for that Cy Young award in the NL. But I think Chris Sale just takes it. Once again, he won the Triple Crown. He was just the better pitcher overall. I mean, sure, Wheeler had more length and longevity, got more innings, but I don't think it really matters because Chris Sale led in wins and Chris Sale had more strikeouts, and it's just got to be Chris Sale and Tarik Skubal, right? And then for fantasy, I am with you 100%. I think Zach Wheeler is someone who deserves recognition as a fantasy Cy Young stalwart. But I will give it to Chris Sale only because Zach Wheeler was drafted in what, the first two rounds? Chris Sale was drafted a little bit later.
Yep.
And to me, that just gives you the value. You were able to take someone like, I don't know, Aaron Judge instead of Zach Wheeler, we'll just say. I mean, I know that's wrong. It's a little bit later, but you could take someone like that or Francisco Lindor, let's say, instead of getting Zach Wheeler. And then you could grab Chris Sale later and he gave you the similar numbers, right? So to me, I guess he just edges it over Zach Wheeler. But both of them were so phenomenal and easy could be fantasy Cy Young winner. So I'm going to give both my real and fantasy Cy Young to Chris Sale and Tarik Skubal. And now for the last real award before we go into straight up fantasy awards is the Rookie of the Year award, which there were some interesting options this season. It wasn't just one runaway easy pick for each league, but there were some interesting names. So, John, get us started. Who were your fantasy Rookie of the Year winners, and who were your real life Rookie of the Year winners?
Yeah, so for the fantasy Rookie of the Year, we don't care about what league you play in. And so for me, Paul Skeens, just easy pick for rookie. I mean, technically, Shota Imanaga was also a rookie, But I think if we're really in the spirit of the game, so to speak, I'm going to give it to Paul Skeens. Obviously, electric pitcher, 11.5 K per nine, 1.96 ERA. His whip, I believe, was, sorry, I'm pulling up the numbers. 0.95 whip. Just insane numbers. And then, like, this wasn't over like a 70 innings, like, sample, 133 innings, right? Like, that's more than half a season where he was contributing in a big way. He's playing for Pittsburgh, who, again, finished bottom of the NL Central, granted 76-86, so they weren't like super terrible like the White Sox. He still managed 11 wins, only three losses, with that offense behind him, which was not very good, and the defense behind him, which also wasn't exactly the greatest. The walks were all right, 2.17 walks per nine, 6.2% walk rate. Like, just a really, really solid pitcher, and he looked like he immediately belonged as soon as he came up, right? The difference between him and Shota Imanaga, obviously, is that Imanaga's pitched for many years in Japan. He's had the experience of, like, pitching at a professional level. Skeens was in college last season, and he came up and just absolutely rocked the majors. So, yeah, for me, he is easily one of my fantasy rookie of the years.
Yeah, Paul Skeens is unbelievable. I mean, the fact that this kid is 22 years old and he looks like the best pitcher on the planet is just scary. Like, beware, league. I mean, the Pirates are terrible. Their team is not good.
Yeah.
But with Paul Skeens on the mound, they can win at least 20 games. I mean, they're free of being the White Sox because Paul Skeens is on their team. I mean, that's pretty serious. So, yeah, Paul Skeens is also a fantasy rookie of the year for myself. And I'm scared for next season because I am so excited about him.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's just going to go so high in drafts, rightfully so, right? Like,
yes,
you said, he pitched 133 innings, which is only 40 less than Chris Sale did, by the way.
Yeah.
Okay, and he had a 1.96 ERA, a 0.95 whip, 15 quality starts, by the way, and 170 strikeouts in those 133 innings. So what he did is incredible. I mean, to have 11 wins and 15 quality starts on the Pirates in 23 games started is just so impressive for a 22-year arm who was in, oh my God, he was in college last year. I just can't even fathom it. It's remarkable. So Paul Skeens, easily my fantasy rookie of the year. And then for real life, John, who do you think is going to win this award?
In the National League, I think I have Paul Skeens winning it.
Okay.
It's going to be a tie race between him, Jackson Merrill, and Jackson Churio for sure. And we'll talk about the two Jacksons in a bit. But I think the way that Skeens kind of took the league by storm is just more impressive. Like, it took Merrill and Churio both a little bit of time to kind of get warmed up to playing in the majors, and both of them, like, eventually were really good players for sure. I think Merrill ended up as like a top 10 outfielder overall in roto leagues for sure. But I think Skeens was just good from start to finish, and for me that plays a little bit more, even though he wasn't up for the entire season like Merrill and Churio were.
Yeah, so for me in the NL, it's so tough. I genuinely think that Jackson Merrill will win the Rookie of the Year in real life. And that's because, mainly what you said, he played the whole season. He played 156 games. And in 156 games, he batted .292. I mean, that can't get overlooked, that a rookie who is the age of 21 hit .292 for the Padres, leading them into the postseason, playing well in the postseason as well. He hit 24 homers, had 16 stolen bases, 77 runs scored, and 90 RBI while batting .292. That is super impressive. And I think because he plays defense, and pretty good defense as well, because he played all year, because he played for a team that eventually went on to play in the postseason, because he hit almost .300, because he had 24 homers, 16 stolen bases, I just think that they're going to give it to the everyday position player. But the only thing that makes me think that they won't, it really depends on the writers and who is voting. But if they want to give a next face of baseball sort of award out, they're going to give it to Paul Skeens, right?
Sure.
because during the All-Star game, it was all about Paul Skeens. It was the Livy Dunn and Paul Skeens show. What are they wearing? How do you throw your fastball? What's going on? You're incredible, blah, 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 blah. So if they just want to say, hey, this is the next upcoming face of baseball, you can't miss his starts, he's the best pitcher, and they want to promote him, they're going to give him the award. But if they want to give it to the guy who was up all season and grinded and played defense and offense and was great all across the board, I think Jackson Merrill wins this award. And Jackson Churio also should not be slighted. He is clearly the third. I mean, actually, Shota Imanaga could be clearly the third, too. It's a really close NL Rookie of the Year race, right? Yeah. Like, Paul Skeens, Jackson Merrill, Jackson Churio, and Shota Imanaga all could win this award. They were all incredible this year. So those guys all deserve the recognition, but I think it's a two-horse race with Paul Skeens and Jackson Merrill, just because Paul Skeens is more flashy than Shota, but Shota did it all year, and he was incredible. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to undersell that either, because he was incredible. I will talk more about Shota later, too, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, I think if we're just picking guys in fantasy, right, the top three rookies for sure, Skeens, Merrill, and Churio, and then Imanaga, of course, kind of as an honorable mention, but just as deserving as those three for, like, if I was going to give out a fantasy Rookie of the Year award.
Oh, yeah. If you had any of these guys on your team, I bet you did well in fantasy. Like, if you drafted them or picked them up, like, these are the guys that change your whole year because they went undrafted for the most part, and you picked them up, and they were absolute studs. So kudos to all of them. And then moving on to the AL, who do you think is winning the Rookie of the Year there?
Yeah, this was a interesting race because I was just looking at the stats and trying to figure out, you know, who really pulled ahead. No one really was amazing in the American League this year, which I found kind of interesting. Colton Cowser had like a really nice little hot streak when he initially came up to the majors. Lawrence Butler was like essentially the MVP of the season from like middle of August afterwards because of just how many homers he was hitting. And weirdly enough, I ended up settling on Wyatt Langford as my AL Rookie of the Year, which I don't know if he ends up getting it, but there was a lot of hype around him. He didn't necessarily meet the hype, but looking at his season-ending numbers, like, it's really solid. 16 homers, 74 runs, 74 RBIs, 19 stolen bases, only a 20.6% strikeout rate, so really good plate discipline, 9.2% walk rate, a 253 average, a 325 OBP, 415 slugging. Really solid numbers there. Colton Cowser is like right there though, right? 24 homers, 77 runs, 69 RBI, 9 stolen bases, right? So more homers, but less steals. The walk rate's just as high, 9.3%, but he is striking out a lot more, 30.7% strikeout rate. The average is lower than Langford's. He was batting 242. The OBP was a little bit lower, but the slugging is higher. Obviously, 8 more homers helps in that department. So they're more or less neck to neck. And I think I just give the edge a little bit to Langford just because of how a little bit more balanced he was, right? The 19 steals, that's really impressive, like 10 more than Cowser. And it's around the same number of plate appearances, 557 versus 561. A little bit better average. So even though Cowser has the lead in homers, I think I end up giving the award to Wyatt.
That's very, very fair. I think it's a coin flip between those two, right? Like, there's really no one else, like, what, Willier Abreu of the Red Sox or Sedan Rafaela? Like, I don't know. I really don't think there's a standout AL candidate. I mean, Cade Smith, was he a rookie for the Guardians, the reliever? He was fantastic, but, you know, like, he's not going to win Rookie of the Year. So between Wyatt Langford and Colton Cowser, I think it's a coin flip however the writers want to vote. Once again, if they want to make a next face of baseball sort of deal, I think they go with Wyatt Langford. Mm-hmm. And I think if they want to go with the guy who was on the team that made the playoffs and was a success story, then they'll go with Colton Cowser. And I think that Colton Cowser will end up ultimately edging out Wyatt Langford for the award in real life. Mm-hmm. And that's just because, like I said, the team context, they were a winning team that ended up, you know, making it to the postseason, and Cowser filled a big role in that. And he was on a very big hot streak to start. And then he obviously went a huge slump and got benched every now and then, but then he came back and righted the ship and was awesome to end the year.
Yeah.
So I think that Cowser will win it for that regard just because of team context, because the Rangers kind of did nothing at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he might win the coin flip. And then for fantasy, It's the same thing that I said for Zach Wheeler and Chris Sale. Couser was ultimately undrafted everywhere.
Yeah.
And Wyatt Langford had so much helium and hype in drafts that he was going in the fifth, sixth, seventh round. And ultimately, if you drafted Wyatt Langford, you were probably disappointed. I mean, he turned it on in the second half, which bailed out what you were disappointed about. Mm-hmm. But if you picked up Colton Couser, you were very happy with what you got. But because Wyatt Langford's helium and hype was so big to start the season, it kind of seemed like a letdown, although it was a great season at the end of the year. I mean, you said the numbers, they were fantastic. They ended up being really good. But I think because Colton Couser was a better value, undrafted, free agent pickup, and kind of filled in for your team when you needed him to, I think he wins my fantasy rookie of the year as well for the AL. So it's a tough call to make.
Yeah, the challenge for me with Couser is that, like, so I had him on my fantasy team. Now, granted, it's an 11-team league, so very shallow, right? Like, not deep at all. Only three outfielders, one util spot. So Couser was actually up and down on my team throughout the year. I picked him up when he came up from the minors, and then halfway through the season, I think I dropped him just because he wasn't producing super well.
Right.
I picked him up again. And I think it just kind of shows that the American League, the quality in the American League in terms of rookies this year just wasn't as good. Yep. I know the other name that's been thrown around is Luis Gil of the Yankees. 151 innings from him, 10.15 strikeouts per nine, which is a really solid number, 3.5 ERA. The problem I have with Luis Gil is just that he just was not consistent, right? He had that very good elite streak. I think it was like seven starts or something like that, where he was just borderline like the best pitcher in baseball, and then he just fell off really hard for a couple games, but did come back and showed, you know, a lot of promise. And I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up being the rookie of the year, just because of just how, not bad, but just like how average the quality of Colton Couser and Wyatt Langford were this season. But yeah, to me, it feels like a coin flip between all three of those guys in terms of who ends up winning the award.
I think that's a great word to accumulate all of the AL rookie options, is inconsistent, right? Like Colton Couser had a very bad stretch, like you said. Wyatt Langford started off terribly. Luis Gil had a horrible stretch. So they were all inconsistent, whereas Paul Skeens, Merrill, Churio, and Shota were amazing all year long.
Yep.
So the quality was definitely worse in the AL for rookies, but they are still two good players that can win the award. And I think that Colton Couser ultimately will win it, but I think it's going to be a coin flip, like I said. And it's tough to see that the quality was so much worse to the NL, because it wasn't as exciting. I mean, the NL, really, I have no idea who can win this thing. And I'm chomping at the bit to see who will win. But for the AL, I don't really care as much. You know, yeah. Not really that important. So unfortunately, that's not great. But that wraps up the actual awards for real life and for fantasy for the MVP, Cy Young, and Rookie of the Year. And we are going to take a break. And when we come back, we will talk about the fantasy awards for the 2024 season. We'll be back after this. All right, we are back, and it's time to pick up on the fantasy awards for 2024. We are going to start with our first made-up award, the second half MVP, because a lot of you who are going deep into your fantasy runs and your playoffs, you know these guys that really held you down and moved you forward in the second half, because we often forget who did well in the first half, because sure, if you didn't do well in the first half, you don't really look at fantasy, right? And you kind of tail off and you don't remember anything. But in the second half, if you're in it, you remember the guys that won you the chip. So, John, who were your second half MVPs for fantasy this year?
Yeah, I think my first name is Brent Rooker. Since July 1st, he had 24 homers, 53 runs, 65 RBI, batted .323. Also added 9 stolen bases for the fun of it. Brent Rooker for me just became a guy who, weirdly enough, is like became one of the better hitters in the league, like probably a top 20 batter, which is kind of insane for me to think about, especially considering the Twins like more or less cut Brent Rooker like two seasons ago. They didn't cut him, they traded him, but they basically more or less traded him for nothing. He's been really good this entire season, but he really turned it on the second half. And so for me, he's kind of my second half MVP. Honorable mention, of course, to Eugenio Suarez, who I just obviously Labat, who had actually like pretty comparable numbers to Rooker, just had no steals and had a, you know, a lower average, but did have more runs and RBIs, which is kind of interesting. But yeah, for me, Rooker was the MVP of the second half. And then in terms of pitching, I had Blake Snell, but I'll let you kind of talk a little bit more about Blake Snell.
So Brent Rooker's a great pick. He could actually have been just your fantasy MVP in general. I mean, the season that he had was incredible. Like, that is just unbelievable how good of a season Brent Rooker had. I mean, who would have expected that, right? Out of someone who was on the Athletics, a team that we didn't expect to win more than 50 games, right? Mm-hmm. For Brent Rooker to be a standout player for fantasy. And sure, he's had pretty good seasons for fantasy in the past. Nothing too incredible, but what he did this season was remarkable. So shout out to Brent Rooker. For me, the second half MVP was Corbin Carroll. And that is just something that I'm very happy about, because I had a lot of shares of Corbin Carroll, and that's why, for me specifically, I didn't go and research who was the best in the second half or who really had the best second half in terms of hitters for fantasy baseball. I just know that Corbin Carroll saved a lot of my teams by being able to not do what he did in the first half, because with what he did in the first half, he probably lost a lot of people their leagues, right? Because he was drafted within the first 5 or 6 picks in the first round. I mean, he was taking so much draft capital from you that with what he did in the first half, which let me just read it off real quick because it was bad. First half numbers. He batted .212. He hit 5 home runs. He stole a total of 18 bases, which that's good, but once again, that's what he's mainly known for. But 5 home runs. He only had 32 RBI and 60 runs scored. Batting .212, not good. 5 home runs, not good. 18 steals, pretty good. The runs, good. RBI, bad. Well, in the second half, Corbin Carroll batted .258, which still is not what Corbin Carroll's capable of. We know he could be a .280-plus hitter. We know that he's better than this. Obviously, he had a little bit of a sophomore slump. But the big boost here is that basically in the first half, in 93 games, he hit 5 home runs. In 63 games in the second half, he hit 17 home runs. I mean, that is remarkable. 17 home runs in 63 games. This guy was unconscious in the second half. I believe he hit 11 home runs in August alone. I mean, that is insane. So Corbin Carroll really flipped the switch, turned it on, and brought the power back, because I genuinely thought that Corbin Carroll was going to be a player that hits anywhere from 15 to 20 home runs and steals between 35 and 45 bases. And that's pretty much what he did in his rookie year, but he exceeded on the home run front. He had 25 homers. He stole over 50 bases. He was incredible. And that's why he was being drafted in the first round this year. But I thought the power would tail off. I didn't think he's a 25 home run hitter. I thought he was more of a 15 home run hitter. But I thought the steals would still be 50. Well, he ended with 35 stolen bases, and he hit 22 home runs, which, man, I can't believe he was even over 20. But that's because of a huge 17 home runs in the second half. So Corbin Carroll, huge second half contributor. What he did going unconscious like that, he helped win a lot of my fantasy leagues. So shout out to Corbin Carroll. And then I, too, have Blake Snell as my second half MVP for the pitching side of things. He was unbelievable, but he is the notorious second half MVP pitcher, right? He does this every season. And this season's a little bit different because he did sign a contract very late and then he wasn't able to pitch a normal spring training. He had an abbreviated spring training and then he played in, you know, AAA games and kind of got built up very quickly and didn't really have a traditional offseason, right? So we weren't expecting Blake Snell to just light the world on fire right when he came back. And he really didn't. In the first half, he had a 6.31 ERA in 35 innings. That is not good. I don't have to tell you all that. If you're listening to this podcast, you know a 6.31 ERA is terrible. But Blake Snell, like I said, didn't have time to ramp up like he usually would. He signed his contract very late within the offseason. So I give him a pass on that. But then in the second half, whether it was shaking off all of the rust or it was just him going back to his normal performance in the second half, he had a 1.45 ERA in 68 innings in the second half. That is just a joke. You know, like, that is just silly. So Blake Snell, you easily win second half MVP. I mean, if we were only doing second half performances, he would have won the Cy Young because what he did was remarkable, and he's done this every season now for like 3 years. So the moral of the story is, if you draft Blake Snell, just make sure you don't drop him after the first half, because he is going to be great in the second half. So just hold out. Don't sell low. Don't drop. Hold on to Blake Snell, because his second half numbers are that of Jacob DeGrom.
Yeah, the ERA was better than Tarek Skubal. So
yeah, yep.
That's got to count for something.
Yeah, so Blake Snell, kudos to you. Those were the second half MVPs from John and I for fantasy. Brent Rooker, Corbin Carroll, and Blake Snell. Moving on to the next award, which is the Best Sleeper Award, which means an ADP greater than 300. So a sleeper that people would really hype up in the preseason, that we're all like, yeah, you got to draft this guy late. Get him on your team. He might do something good. John, who are your Best Sleeper Award winners?
Yeah, I think for me, my two guys are Jerickson Profar and Jack Flaherty. And both these guys had, you know, fringe cases for being drafted, right? They're, both of them aren't exactly household names, but they're well-known, right? Jack Flaherty, obviously a former ace with the St. Louis Cardinals. Jerickson Profar, just a very solid outfielder for San Diego. But both these guys just were incredible this season. Jack Flaherty, of course, was essentially the best pitcher on the Tigers not named Tarek Skubal, and he got traded to the Dodgers and proceeded to like also do really well, which was really cool to see. And he ended up basically with really solid win numbers. I think he finished with 13 wins this season out of 28 opportunities, 10.78 K per 9, 3.17 ERA. His whip was 1.07. So just really solid numbers compared to his previous couple years where he struggled with both St. Louis and with Baltimore. And he kind of got back to the ace status, which I think, you know, a lot of people were a little bit out on him after last season. He didn't look the same after he got during when he was with the Cardinals, and then after he got traded to Baltimore. But something worked out with him where I think his fastball velocity kind of went up back when he was with Detroit this season. And yeah, it just kept working out for him. So really solid season from Flaherty for sure. And then with Profar, I think for him, the most impressive thing is just that he did this well this season. And San Diego was a little bit down this year because, you know, you lose Juan Soto. You know, what happens to this team? Obviously, they still have Tatis. They still have Machado. You know, we have this rookie coming up. We don't really know what he's all about. And yet that team all kind of came together. They gelled really well. Profar ended the season with 24 homers, 94 runs, 85 RBI, 10 stolen bases, batting third in that lineup, 280 average, and was just like a really solid player. His overall like ratios in terms of his walks and strikeouts didn't actually change that much from previous seasons, but he was just doing more with the ball when he was hitting it, kind of evidenced by a 459 slugging, which more or less is career high. He had a 471 when he was with Texas in 2012, but that was only 9 games, so it doesn't really count. So just a career year from Profar, and it really worked out in fantasy. He ended up being like a top 20 outfielder. He finished 11th. So yeah, really, really solid player in fantasy with an ADP of 629 based on NFBC data. So yeah, just a really great season for Profar.
Yeah, both of those guys showed out. They were definitely going south of 300, and they were just dominant this year. I mean, Profar, who would have thought, right? Like, Jack Flaherty, maybe you think would come back to form at some point, and you were hoping for the best there, but Profar, he just had a career year out of nowhere. So, shout out to Jerickson Profar. I think Brent Rooker had a little bit higher of an ADP than 300. Like, he was lower in terms of
He was at
that,
296, so yeah, that's why I took him out.
That's crazy. I didn't think that it was that close.
He would have been my guy in this pick, but, yep, just, you know, arbitrary number of 300. Oh, sorry, Brent Rooker.
Yeah, not to talk about the same guy over and over again. I like that. Hey, good on you, John. That's podcast content right there. That's great.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that's tough. But Brent Rooker, a great season. You could have been a sleeper as well. We're just kind of taxing you on that one. But for me, I have three names. I'm not going to talk too much about all three, but the only reason I bring these three guys up is I actually had a lot of shares of them in best ball leagues, and I know that they were going outside of 300 across NFBC and whatnot, so I don't know the exact number of what they were across the board, but I know I was taking these guys south of 300, and they ended up having incredible seasons and having career years, and I'm excited for them for next year. So we're going to start with Mark Vientos. Obviously, as a Mets fan, I'm huge on this guy, and I'm so happy he developed into the player that he always could have been. And I will talk about him a little bit more later on as well. But in 111 games, he had 27 home runs, 71 RBI, 58 runs scored, and he hit 266, 322, 516. Just incredible. I mean, he had the highest OPS amongst third basemen that qualified, I think, besides Jose Ramirez. So just that alone shows you how amazing Mark Vientos was. And I was pretty much handcuffing him and Brett Beatty in all of my best ball leagues because I knew one of them would get the job. I knew Beatty got it off the bat, but if Beatty struggled, I knew Vientos would get the shot. And man, thank God I handcuffed him to Beatty because Beatty stunk and Vientos was amazing. So Vientos, incredible sleeper there for me. Luis Garcia Jr. of the Nationals is another one that I just think is so underrated. He played in a career high games of 140. His previous high was 122, which was last season. He hit 282, 318, 444. He had a career high of 18 home runs, which is 9 more than last season. He had a career high of 22 stolen bases, which last year he had 9, which was a career high. So to go nearly 20-20 with a 280 batting average on a team like the Nationals, who weren't very good, in only 140 games, very impressive, especially at second base, which is a terrible position. Both Vientos and Garcia are at weak positions, third base and second base, so Luis Garcia Jr., incredible sleeper. He's going to be great, and I think he's very undervalued. He's only 24 years old as well, so just kudos to him. And then Lawrence Butler of the Athletics, who we've mentioned already, and we're going to mention again later because he is very good. And in just 125 games for Lawrence Butler, who he's relatively a rookie. He played in 42 games last season, and now he's at 125 games. I don't think he qualifies as a rookie because of last season, but I'm not 100% sure on the eligibility purposes. But in 125 games, 262 batting average, 317 OBP, 490 slugging, 22 home runs, and 18 stolen bases. I mean, 40 combined homers and steals in 125 games. That is something of a superstar. So I don't know what to expect out of this guy, but the advanced stats look great. All of the Baseball Savant and pitcher list metrics and deep dives all look great. This guy improved against left-handed pitching. There's a lot to like about Lawrence Butler. Only thing not to like is the team that he's on. But besides that, Lawrence Butler looks like a star. So those are my three best sleepers for their ADP for the 2024 season. I think they all showed out and they gave you way more than you expected for that ADP range.
Yeah, Butler for sure. Like you mentioned, like almost becoming a 2020 player in 120 game sample. Right. That kind of speaks to the fact that he probably has some 25-25 potential in his makeup. He's still young. Like, yes, that Oakland team is not very good, but hey, guess what? They're going to be playing half their games in a minor league park next season. It's just going to be really fun to watch Oakland, or I guess Sacramento, play baseball next season just because of just the weird park dimensions and everything. I definitely would expect Butler to be kind of a hot commodity in drafts next season, just because of how people are projecting that Oakland team to do offensively.
So I think Butler could be a 30-30 guy, and I don't think that's too far of a stretch because he improved greatly at the plate. I mean, small sample size from what we've seen from him in the majors, but 108 strikeouts and 35 walks, that's pretty good. That's not too crazy. His plate discipline was very good. Like I said, he improved against left-handed pitching, which is great. And then if you just want to compare, right, like O'Neill Cruz is now an outfielder. I think he still has shortstop eligibility across the board next year.
He does. Yeah.
But he will be shortstop and outfield eligible. And let's just pretend he doesn't have shortstop eligibility. Between O'Neill Cruz and Lawrence Butler, O'Neill Cruz played in 146 games. Lawrence Butler played in 125. O'Neill Cruz hit 21 home runs and stole 22 bases with a 259 average and 324 OBP. Lawrence Butler hit 22 home runs, stole 18 bases with a 262 average and a 317 OBP. Relatively similar. And we're taking O'Neill Cruz in, what, the first five rounds? And Lawrence Butler, I don't know where he's going or where he's going to go, but I think I'd rather Lawrence Butler almost if they just both only have outfield eligibility, that is. So I don't know. I think they're both very talented players, and the sky is the limit for both of them. They both could have the floor drop out from underneath them, of course. They're very risky players. But I think with the profiles that they have, they're very similar, and they can both be 30-30-esque guys.
Yeah, both those guys could definitely take a leap next season, right?
Yeah.
And this was essentially kind of the first full season for both of them, right? Yep. O'Neill Cruz did play half a season 2 years ago. But, yeah, this is definitely a good opportunity for both those guys to build off on. And, yeah, Cruz probably, just because of name recognition, is going to go in the top five rounds. Butler's going to go a couple rounds behind him. I think Butler, though, like you said, is one of those sneaky, like, if you really know what you're doing in drafts, like, he's one of those guys where you get, like, a couple rounds later compared to O'Neill, and you feel perfectly fine with what you've got there.
Yeah, no, I agree completely on that. So we are on the same page, same wavelength there. Moving on to the next award, Best Value in Drafts. We're not going to go really in-depth on these guys. We're just going to mention their names, maybe give a little bit of a in-depth thing, but you know why they're the best value in drafts. You got them way later in the draft than you were supposed to, and they put up numbers of that of a first rounder or a second rounder. John, who were your best value in draft award winners?
Yeah, so first name, Chris Sale. I think that's obvious. I got him for a dollar in my auction league. So, yeah, I will take that for a Cy Young winner. So I was pretty happy with that. Gunnar Henderson's my next name, which is kind of weird because obviously he's a first round talent now, but he was still going in like the third round in last season's draft. So getting, I know it's not a huge jump from a third round talent to a first round talent, but he was far and away, like, behind Jose Ramirez, the best third baseman, behind Bobby Witt, the best shortstop in terms of position eligibility. So just great numbers from him overall this season. And yeah, really solid pickup that you could have gotten in the third round. And then Ketel Marte, we talked about him a lot actually in our last episode, but this is a guy who is getting drafted in like the 9th round, 10th round, ended up being the best second baseman in baseball this year. And yeah, hard to beat that type of value.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. When I saw you write Ketel Marte in our notes that we planned for this, I was like, oh, you're so right. I was like, that is the one. I think that honestly is the best value in drafts this whole season, because he was going between round 7 and 10, like you said, and he was the best second baseman. I mean, the people ahead of him, like Jose Altuve, Ozzie Albies, Marcus Semien, they all were not as good as Ketel Marte this year. I mean, Altuve was great, and Marcus Semien had his moments, but Ketel Marte was the number one second baseman this year, and you got him so deep in your drafts.
Right, and technically, it's a little flawed because Mookie Betts was out for, you know, 2 months.
True.
But at the same time, the value that Marte was giving you, like, arguably maybe same level as Mookie Betts this season. So,
yes.
Yeah, just a phenomenal value in drafts, and he's going to shoot up draft boards this year, unfortunately.
Yeah, he is going to go in that Marcus Semien range where we were drafting him last year, like third round probably, because of how bad second base is as a position. Mm-hmm. For me, I went with Shota Imanaga, who I was getting easily between rounds 10 to 18, as deep as 18 in one of my leagues. I know in TGFBI, I drafted him in the 13th round. I drafted him in the 13th round of my home league. I drafted him in the 18th round of a best ball league. Like, I was getting Shota Imanaga so late that he was just such a great value. And obviously, he could be the Rookie of the Year award winner. He will get Cy Young award votes. He was incredible. So Shota, shout out to you. Willie Adames, he was critically undervalued in drafts, and he was incredible this year, having a career year before his free agency. And then Riley Green, who was going relatively unknowingly late in drafts where you didn't really expect too much from him, but because outfield was so bad, and in best ball leagues, it's usually 5 outfield formats, or in 15 teamers, you need 5 outfielders. Riley Green was a guy that I was drafting as a outfield 4, and he performed like an outfield 2. So he was an incredible value for me as well. So those are my 3 guys, Shota Imanaga, Willie Adames, and Riley Green. Moving on to the next fantasy award, Best Waiver Wire Pickup. Now, there's a lot of speculation on this one because waiver wire pickup can mean a lot of things, right? especially depending on your league size, there might be people out there that were drafted or in a shallower league. Maybe someone gave up on someone, dropped them, and then you were able to pick them up in your league, but they're not available for everyone on the waiver wire. So there is a lot of different ways you can go about this award. But John, in total, who were your best waiver wire pickup award winners?
Yeah, this is where I'll give Brent Rooker his flowers again.
Yeah.
Because he was essentially on waiver wire. So there he was getting picked, you know, like in the late 290s. Basically meant he was either getting picked in the last round of your drafts or just not getting picked at all. And turns out, hey, he's actually a top 10 batter. So, yeah, that's pretty good in terms of waiver wire pickups. Paul Skenes is my next name. I think for him, it kind of depends on your league and whether you'd had a lot of draft spots. In a bunch of leagues that I was in, the benches weren't deep enough that Paul Skenes was not like was just being hoarded on a team. He didn't start until he didn't come up to the majors until a month after opening day, right? And so to stash a guy for a month, that is asking a lot. And so I imagine Skenes was likely available in a good amount of leagues. So obviously for him, getting a top five pitcher with a waiver pickup, that's pretty solid. This is where I'll talk about Eugenio Suarez. He had a pretty awful first half of the season and then absolutely came alive in the second half of the season. I already kind of talked about his numbers. Over 20 homers, really solid average, really good runs in RBIs as well. And on Arizona, which was the hottest offense pretty much for the second half of the season. So Eugenio Suarez, definitely a really solid pickup. And at third base, too. He ended up finishing as, I think, like a top five third baseman in roto leagues. And so to get that value for a guy that probably was still on the waiver wire in late June, really solid. And then Ian Happ, for him, you know, the thing that's always dogged Ian Happ is just his inconsistency and just how there's, you know, he'll go for hot streaks from time to time. And it felt like this year that was also going to be the case. He was probably dropped, you know, early on in the season after a pretty much of a cold spell. And then hopefully you picked him up when he went on that really interesting, like, homer tier that he did go on. But then he kind of just didn't stop being good for the rest of the season. And so Ian Happ for me, you know, probably was, in my opinion, he was on the waiver wire in my league, right? And that's what I'm basing this on. And he ended up as the 16th best outfielder in terms of roto for a guy who was getting drafted basically in like the 13th and 14th round. An outfielder 3 eventually became an outfielder 1. So, yeah, shout out to those guys for being really solid waiver wire pickups this year.
Yeah, those are all good picks. My list is going to be just pitchers because when I use the waiver wire, sure, you could pick up a guy like Brent Rooker or Riley Green in shallower leagues because he probably went undrafted and they helped you all season long. But for me, pitchers really stand out because I'm always scouring the waiver wire for streaming possibilities and pitchers to pick up for injuries. I mean, I had tons of pitching injuries this year. I lost Robbie Ray and Kodai Senga and so many other guys that I can name. You know, you have Brandon Woodruff, who wasn't starting the year healthy, and you can lose Spencer Strider, and a bunch of other guys could get hurt. Well, for the first half, if you picked up Ranger Suarez, he was like the best pitcher in baseball for a long, long, long time. Then he stunk in the second half, obviously. So we're not going to talk too much more about Ranger Suarez. But for that first half, when you picked up Ranger Suarez and he went on that magical run, that was pretty hard to beat when you were playing fantasy baseball. So shout out to Ranger Suarez for the first half. He was one of the best waiver wire pickups by far. Bowden Francis in the second half was one of the best waiver wire pickups for pitchers as well. You can also lump Spencer Schwellenbach in with this because he went on a great run as well. But Bowden Francis was just unbelievable. He took like 2 no-hitters into the ninth. I mean, who would have thought? I mean, this guy was an afterthought for most people. He was a potential good rookie pitcher for the Blue Jays. And then he showed out in that second half. I mean, the first half he had like a 6 ERA, and the second half he was, I think, a 180 ERA pitcher. So just disgusting from Bowden Francis. And then lastly, Sean Manaea, who just had a great season overall. I was just going to mention that he was great in the second half since he changed his arm angle and his arm slot to that of Chris Sale after he saw him pitch. And from that moment on, he was like one of the best pitchers in baseball. But then when I looked into the second half numbers and the first half numbers, they're like identical. He had a 3.46 ERA in the first half and a 3.48 ERA in the second half. So I was kind of shocked, even though I watch every single Met game. I knew he was great all year, But I just, for some reason, thought the first half was not as good as the second half. And it turns out by ERA, it was actually better. So I was shocked by that. But I like Sean Manaea for what he was able to give you all year long. That second half was magical. And I hope that the Mets are able to bring him back. But those are my best waiver wire pickup awards, those three pitchers. Moving on to biggest bust. The biggest bust award is one you do not want to win in fantasy baseball, for sure. And there were a lot of names. So, John, without going too far in depth, what is your list of biggest bust award winners? Because there is a lot of guys we could talk about.
Yeah, I tried to avoid guys with injury, but the first guy that came to mind was Yoshinobu Yamamoto. And, of course, he's dealing with injuries the entire season, so it's unfair to name him as a bust. But this was a guy who just had so much hype around him. And when he pitched, he was really good. He had a 3 ERA this season. Really good K/9 numbers, but the problem just was health for Yoshinobu. And, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, you hype up a guy that he had rookie of the year sort of aspirations. There was even some talk of like, hey, could this guy even like kind of challenge for the Cy Young? None of those things happened, unfortunately, because of injuries. He only pitched 90 innings this season. So, just an unfortunate thing. The other guys to me that just stood out as busts, Paul Goldschmidt. I mean, yes, he's old, but he's still getting drafted pretty high as, you know, essentially a top five first baseman is kind of where top seven first baseman was where he was kind of going in drafts and just absolutely did not deliver at all. Christian Walker did better than him, who was drafted after him. Spencer Steer, Josh Naylor. Yep. A bunch of guys who just frankly were drafted after Goldschmidt who just did a lot better than him. And that entire Cardinals team, I could have lumped Nolan Arenado into this as well, but he actually had a little bit of a resurgence at the end of the season. But Goldschmidt was more or less just ineffective the entire year. Kevin Gausman, kind of the same thing, just an absolute fall for grace from him. He kind of lost the splitter, wasn't as effective. He more or less became a one-pitch pitcher. He did kind of turn it around, though, at the end of the season. Kind of good to see it coming back a little bit for him. We'll see if that continues next year. He's not getting any younger, so obviously a little tough for him, but obviously was not delivering at the ace level that you were all expecting him to be at. Yainer Diaz, who you and I both love, but we're very nervous about for the first half of the season because he was not good at all. There was definitely some things where it's like, hey, like this guy is like not even a top 10 catcher at this point. But he turned it around second half of the season. He was great. Thank you for redeeming our belief in you, Yainer. And let's hope you kind of, you know, continue to be awesome next season. And then George Springer, which I don't know if he's truly a bust, but this was a guy who, for the most part, you kind of know what you get out of George Springer. And then this year, he just did not deliver at all at what he was hoping at. It's maybe a little harsh to label a guy who was drafted like an outfielder two as a bust, but he more or less became someone who was like unrosterable. And that's a little tough.
Yeah. So for me, I just have to comment quickly on Kevin Gausman. I had a few shares of him, one being a TGFBI. And although his end of season numbers didn't look too bad, genuinely, when you look back at him, you're like, okay, he did okay.
Yeah.
But he felt way more like a bust than what his numbers show. Like, he felt like the biggest bust of the year. And I was going to put him on my list as well, but his numbers weren't too bad, so I didn't really include it. But he felt like a bust compared to where he was being drafted. You know, like, that was a bust guy for sure. So for my biggest bust award winners, got to start with the two obvious ones. First round, both got injured for the whole year, Ronald Acuña Jr. and Spencer Strider. Of course, this is the year that I draw the first pick in drafts two times across my, like, seven leagues, and I get Acuña twice and just lose out on him immediately. Like, how unfun is that? That stinks. So, yeah, Acuña and Strider, obvious reasons, both got hurt, which just stinks. Then the first half guys that didn't get hurt but were just bad, Corbin Carroll and Julio Rodriguez, in the first half, they probably lost a lot of people their leagues because they were just so unbearably bad. They both turned it on in the second half. Julio had a monstrous like final 2 weeks that made him look like a good player. And then Corbin Carroll, I already talked about. So they were definitely big busts for the first half, and you got to throw them into the category there. Then probably my biggest bust, just in general, is Bobby Miller. I had, I think, 3 shares of him across the board. Mm-hmm. And he literally had like an 8 ERA, went to the minors, never came back. Like, that guy was the biggest bust because he was going in the first six rounds-ish, depending on your format, and he gave you nothing. He was just stinker after stinker after stinker and then off your team because he wasn't in the majors. So Bobby Miller, humongous bust after being so hyped up by the pitcherless crew, myself, a bunch of different people. Bobby Miller was on everyone's radar, and man, he just disappointed. And then two guys on the same team that disappointed for different reasons, Adolis Garcia and Evan Carter. Carter got hurt, and he was just lackluster to begin with. That whole Rangers team underperformed pretty much. Mm-hmm. It was unfortunate to see. And then Adolis Garcia just hit like 220 and did nothing for like an entire 2 months. So those were all my busts. Any comments on the biggest bust awards for me, John?
I think if I was going to award one single player the biggest bust of the year, it'd be Bobby Miller. Just
yeah.
Because
went in drafts.
Because it wasn't an injury thing. It was purely a talent thing, right?
Yep.
And like, unlike some of these other players that we mentioned, he did not have any sort of second half redemption. He was just bad, and then he was gone. And it's just really unfortunate because this is a guy who had a lot of promise, right? Last year, he was really solid. Dealt with a couple injuries at the beginning of the year, and then just kind of never got it back. So, I mean, here's to hoping that the Dodgers do something with his development over the offseason where he kind of comes back and is able to, you know, be a really solid pitcher because they're going to need him. That rotation is just hobbled. And having a guy like Bobby Miller, who you trust as just maybe even your number three starter, number four starter, is huge. And I would love to see him back in, you know, he doesn't necessarily have to be like the ace level that he was last season, but just anything better than what happened this year.
Yeah, the Dodgers rotation is always an enigma because they have such a good rotation and they're always all hurt. And it makes no sense. Like, their IL for pitchers is like nine guys deep. It is scary. Like, Tyler Glasnow, you have Bobby Miller, who was obviously in the minors, but then you have Clayton Kershaw, and you had Yoshinobu Yamamoto for a while, and then you have Tony Gonsolin, then you have Dustin May, then you have, you know, Jack Flaherty, who you just got. I mean, they have so many pitchers, and so many of them are injured. It's crazy. I mean, Walker Buehler was hurt for a majority, and then he stunk. Just incredible. I mean, the fall off and that whole Dodgers rotation needs to be studied because I don't get what's happening down there. It's like the opposite of what happens in Cleveland.
I mean, they really like to sign guys that are hurt.
Yeah, so, they do.
They have a type, and unfortunately, it usually doesn't work in their favor.
No, it does not. But we are going to move on to our final award for the 2024 fantasy season. And this one, we're just going to tell you the names, and we will maybe elaborate more on these guys in the future. But this award is the most excited about for next season award. John, who are you excited about next year? Who are you going to get a bunch of shares of and be so excited to have on your team?
Yeah, I didn't write this name down, but Shohei Ohtani is a pitcher. I want to see it.
That's exciting.
It's going to be great. That being said, the guys that I'm excited about who are not household names yet, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, you know, kind of a lost season this year. Let's see if we can get it back next year and be a top pitcher. Lawrence Butler, like we already talked about, was the breakout this year real? If it is, oh boy, hold on to your seats, guys, because he's going to be really good next year. And then the Washington outfield to me is like very intriguing. It's a bunch of guys who like aren't great. They're all knocking on the door of like potentially being fantasy relevant. James Wood, Jacob Young, Dylan Cruz, obviously with Wood and Cruz, both those guys heralded rookies. Cruz, you know, obviously was in last year's draft with Paul Skeens. James Wood, really solid, like a lot of interesting just like physical metrics about him that speak to like a potentially really long and successful big league career. And we saw flashes of really good stuff from all three of those guys this year. None of them are like great power hitters, which is kind of frustrating. All have like some speed. Dylan Cruz should have some power in his development. Just really didn't see it this year when he came up to the majors. But all three of those guys, I think, are very interesting sleepers for next year. Maybe not necessarily guys that you go out and draft, but just keep an eye out on the waiver wire because I feel like one of these three has to have a breakout season next year.
Yeah, I like all of those picks, specifically Lawrence Butler. I will have a lot of shares of him if he falls in drafts, if people just don't realize how good he did last year and are scared off by an Oakland Athletics player. You know, I will take a lot of shares of Lawrence Butler. for me, the players that I'm most excited about. I haven't really done my full research on who I'm going to be drafting and who are my sleepers and my deep picks, but I have a feeling I'm going to have a lot of shares of these guys. Wyatt Langford, I think, is going to go later in drafts than he did this season, which is crazy because obviously the initial hype, but Wyatt Langford didn't have the greatest of numbers, but I think that he's going to have an incredibly large 2025 season. I think he's going to go like 30 homers, 25 steals, bat 280 plus, and just be an all-around force. I think he's going to break out in a large way. Jackson Chourio, I think he's going to go high in drafts next year. I think he's going to go in the first five rounds, rightfully so. And I just think he's going to have like a 25-25 season with 100 runs and 100 RBI. Like, I just think he's going to be great. And then for pitchers, Kodai Senga, I just think he's going to go super late in drafts, and people are going to forget that this guy is a legitimate ace. And I was so excited for him this season, and then he got hurt. He came back and got hurt again, which was so unfortunate. But I was really excited about Kodai Senga this year, got him late in a lot of drafts, and then he got hurt again. So I think in a full, healthy Senga season, he is going to be very good. And then Ryan Pepiot, I think we saw a nice little sample size out of him this year. And I think he, if all the things click that we need to click, he can be an ace-like pitcher that goes very late in drafts in 2025.
Yeah, I love Ryan Pepiot. I think he's one of those really sneaky aces. Of course, the unfortunate thing is to pitch for Tampa Bay.
Yep.
But so it's a little tougher to trust him in quality start leagues. But I think if you're in a wins league, it's a little scary too. So actually, it doesn't really matter. I think Pepiot is just going to be a really solid pickup next year.
Yeah, he's going to go late in drafts, and he's going to give you a lot of value. I think that I will have plenty a share of Ryan Pepiot. But those are all of the fantasy awards for the 2024 season. If you have any ideas of other fantasy awards we can give out, let us know, because we kind of made these on the fly, and I think these are the most substantial awards we can give out, but maybe we missed some. Maybe there's a category we'll include for the next season, but those were the awards that we gave out from this year, and we are going to take our last break. And when we come back, we are going to draft the first two rounds of the 2025 season. You won't want to miss it, so stay tuned. We are back, and it's time to get into a future draft for the 2025 season. It's way too early. Right now, it's October 11th, 2024, and we don't know what ADP is. We don't know what any of these guys are going to do. We're just going to wing it, and we're going to treat this as a standard 5x5 head-to-head Yahoo League. So basically, it's the regular categories, wins, saves, ERA, whip, Ks. Then you got runs, homers, RBI, stolen bases, and batting average. And we're going to treat it as a 12-team league. So John and I are going to alternate picks from 1 to 12 and then from 13 to 24. And we are going to see where players land. And if you agree with us, let us know. If not, tell us who you would put in there and who you would move and what you would do, because we would love to hear from you. So, John, who would you like to have the first pick, me or you?
Well, since your Mets are in the playoffs and actually doing well, let's have you go number one.
All right. With the first overall pick of the 2025 season, I did say this was a Yahoo League, so this is unfortunate because I would love to have this guy as just one player.
Yeah.
But I will take Shohei Ohtani, the batter, with my first overall pick, and I'll just briefly explain. I just think what he gives you is unlike anything else. Now, the one downside is when he pitches, we talked about this the other time on another episode. Mm-hmm. When he pitches, the stolen bases go down. Rightfully so, because there's a lot more prep into pitching and you have to worry about not getting hurt and you got to keep those legs fresh. And probably something goes into that. Like, I don't think that if Shohei Ohtani pitches, he's going to go 50-50 again. Like, I think he can hit 50 home runs, but I don't think he could steal 50 bases. I think he'll be in the realm of 20 to 30. But still, if he goes 40 home runs and 30 stolen bases, that's a guy I'll take in the first round with the first pick every single time. And even better in your leagues, if he's one player, you get him as a pitcher and a hitter, and he's the obviously number one pick. But for me, I'm going to take him because I like the stolen base upside. The second pick overall probably is a mix of Aaron Judge or Ellie De La Cruz or Bobby Witt. You can go in a bunch of different directions, but I think that the power-speed combo that Shohei Ohtani provides with good batting average, with good runs and RBI and a great lineup in the Dodgers, I think he's just the overall number one pick.
Yeah. Number two, no surprise, we both had him as our AL MVP. I'm going to go Aaron Judge here.
Yeah, makes sense. So, one, Shohei Ohtani. Two, Aaron Judge. With the third overall pick, I debated this one a little bit, so I'm interested to see if I'll get the guy that I was going to take at number five, if you pass up on him at number four.
Sure.
But I'm going to just jump up the board a little bit, and I'm going to take Jose Ramirez at three. And I do that because, once again, third base is so bad. After I looked at it more in depth, it's not great. Like, Austin Riley, Manny Machado, and a few other guys in that range for third base, they just don't stand out for me anymore. Like, Devers, Jazz Chisholm, Manny Machado, Austin Riley, Royce Lewis, they're all like the same player almost, right? Like, they can all do similar things, but no one could do what Jose Ramirez can do. So, at a really bad third base position, I will take Jose Ramirez with the third overall pick.
Yeah, I was really hoping you'd go Bobby Witt here because I wanted Jose Ramirez at the fourth.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm going to go Bobby Witt at the number fourth pick. We have not mentioned Bobby Witt at all. We mentioned him a little bit at the MVP discussion, but this was a guy who had a 30-30 season. Everything's looking up for him. Obviously, he's just 24 years old, 332 average, 32 homers, 125 runs, 109 RBIs, 31 stolen bases. Just a force in all five categories. You get him at the shortstop position. Yes, there's a lot of good shortstops, but I think he's the cream of the crop there. And I'd very happy to have him at four.
I think that's a great pick. So if I would have took someone else at three, would you have taken Joe Ram at four?
I would have taken Joe Ram at four, yeah.
Okay, good, because my fifth pick wasn't even Bobby Witt if he were the other direction. I was debating on taking Ellie De La Cruz with the third overall pick, but I took Joe Ram because of the position eligibility. So Ellie De La Cruz is my fifth overall pick, and that's just because, man, his upside is just unmatched. He can go 30, 70, and I wouldn't be surprised. So, yeah, Ellie De La Cruz, fifth overall.
All right. Even though a certain Yankee outfielder is still on the board, basically because everything that we just discussed regarding third base, I am going to go with Gunnar Henderson with pick six. I think for him, it's another power speed combo guy, right? He had 37 homers this year, 21 stolen bases, 281 average, which is an improvement on previous years, which is really good to see. He is, I guess he's not going to have third base eligibility next year, is he? He's only going to have shortstop eligibility.
He might only have shortstop eligibility.
That is maybe one of the unfortunate things about Gunnar Henderson this season. But again, shortstop is a very like top heavy position. So if you can get one of the elite ones here, I think that makes a lot of sense. Outfielder, I think even though yes, it tends to be not that deep, I think there's still plenty of good outfielders that you can take. And just with Juan Soto's kind of status up in the air, this also being an average league where his OBP doesn't play as much, that's why I'm going to go Gunner over Soto.
So that is a great pick. And also a reason why Ellie wasn't my third pick is because he also loses third base eligibility, which is tough because with third base and shortstop eligibility for both Ellie and Gunner, they are infinitely more valuable.
Yes.
So, unfortunately, they both lose those eligibilities, most likely on Yahoo and everywhere. So, I'm actually not going to take Juan Soto, and I kind of debated this while you were taking Gunnar Henderson. I'm going to take what I think is the most versatile player in fantasy, and I'm going to jump and take Mookie Betts. And I think just because he has that second base eligibility at a terrible position, once again, second base is horrible, just like third base. He also has outfield eligibility, also has shortstop. This guy is just a Swiss Army knife of eligibilities that is on the Dodgers and bats second right behind Shohei Ohtani and right in front of Freddie Freeman. So I think the run scored will be there. I think the RBI will be there. I think the stolen bases will be there, the homers, just everything. Mookie Betts gives you everything and position eligibilities. And I don't know where Juan Soto is going to end up. I think it's going to be the Mets, but who knows where he ends up? If it's the Mets, I regret not taking him here.
Now we're starting to get to players who have a lot of upside, but maybe aren't five category players. And this is where it gets interesting for me because I know I was just debating picking up Juan Soto versus Gunnar Henderson. And I'm just looking at the board, and I think there's pretty much only there's two five category guys left, I think. And I'm going to go with Francisco Lindor here.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. It's one of those things where it's like he almost had the 30-30 season, right? Like, we know it's possible for him. 273 average this year, so he's not a negative in that. He's essentially a five category player, and it feels like a little bit of a reach considering he was going at the end of the second round last year. But I think this, the consistency from him the last couple seasons, it to me, yes, there might be better players who do better in certain stats compared to Lindor, but getting a five category guy, I think, is what's important to me right now in the first round.
Hey, you don't have to explain picking Francisco Lindor to me, the Mets guy. You know, that's an easy pick. I'm surprised that you took him over the likes of Kyle Tucker. I thought you were going to take Kyle Tucker here.
Yeah, I love Kyle Tucker, but I think just the... Yeah, and I get that Tucker's stats don't make a lot of sense this year because obviously he was hurt for a good chunk of the season. But I just really like what Lindor has done the last 2 years. He's not, you know, old by any means. He's only 30 right now. He's going to be 31 next year. That Mets team, I think, probably sticks together, right? Like, the one wild card, obviously, is Alonso. But that team only is probably going to get better next season. So to me, there's no reason to believe his numbers are going to go down next year.
Yeah, I think the Mets team actually gets significantly better next year, regardless of if we win this year or not. Steve Cohen is going all in on free agency next year. A lot of money comes off the books. I think we're going to be handing out contracts left and right. I think we're going to get a lot of the big free agents. So I wouldn't be surprised if Lindor has an incredible cast around him that you can't even imagine. So that's a great pick. But I thought you were going Kyle Tucker. But for me, with the 9th overall pick, I'm going to take Juan Soto. I mean, we dodged him long enough. It's just pretty obvious. I know it's a batting average league, and in OBP, he would have more of a boon and probably be a higher pick. But in this format, I'm going to go with Juan Soto. Pretty easy to pick him. I mean, there's really no downside to him except maybe not a lot of stolen bases. But I'll take Juan Soto for everything else.
Yeah. I think at pick 10, then, this is where I take Kyle Tucker.
Yep.
There's other outfielders, I think, who have just as much potential as him. I kind of lump him and Tatis in the same range, where both of them were out for about half the season. I know it's not exactly that. Tatis played a lot more games than Tucker did. But I do kind of trust Tucker a little bit more than Tatis. Maybe it's the maturity. Maybe it's just the fact that he didn't get suspended for PEDs. I don't know. But for me, I think I take... if I pick it between the two, between Tucker and Tatis, I'm going to take Tucker.
Yeah, I think Tucker is the right pick there, and I would have picked him there as well. Now, this is interesting, and this is where the debates are going to come in, and this is where the way too early side of things kind of kick in, because you don't really know statuses, and you really don't know what's going to happen or what's going to go on. And this is the tier of outfielder, right? And I kind of thought about this for a little bit already. Is where are we going to take Ronald Acuna Jr. in drafts?
Yeah.
Right? Like, where is going to be feasible? Like, does he miss time next year?
Yep.
How much time does he miss? Is it a month? Is it a week? Does he make it for spring training? Does he miss 3 months? Like, we don't know yet. But I think that the gamble is right now. Because for me, when healthy, obviously Acuna is a top 3 overall player in fantasy. But right after Kyle Tucker leaves the board with Fernando Tatis, Yordan Alvarez, Julio Rodriguez, Corbin Carroll as your big 4 outfielders left, I think this is where I take Ronald Acuna Jr. Because I think if even he plays 2/3 of a season, he'll put up similar or better numbers than those 4 players. So I'm going to take Ronald Acuna Jr. with the 11th pick overall.
All right. So I get the 12 and then the 201 here.
Yep.
I am going to take Yordan Alvarez.
Okay.
Top 5 outfielder this season in Roto Leagues. Obviously, he doesn't give you anything in stolen bases, but he gives you a lot in everything else. I think maybe the most impressive thing or sneaky thing about Alvarez is that his average is so good. He batted .308 this season, batted .293 the year before, .306 the year before that. It is not a flash in the pan. This guy can hit. Not just homers, but he can hit for average as well. So just a guy who is really solid. Of course, I think the thing with this Astros team is that they're all just getting older. Like Alex Bregman is going to be a free agent next year. Altuve is older. I'm not sure if this team is going to be, I would say they've kind of passed their prime just a little bit. And that's a little bit worrying for those team related stats like runs and RBI, but Yordan is just so good that it's, it frankly doesn't matter too much in terms of team context. He is still going to be really, really good.
Yeah, I think you are so right with that, because I think the Astros are past their prime. Even just watching them in the postseason this year and just struggling to even get into the postseason, it seemed like they were a team that's kind of falling apart now. They're on the downswing, right? Like, they had such a miraculous run, cheating or not. They were incredible. Like, that team was unbelievable. But now they're going to be losing Bregman. Kyle Tucker's often injured. Yordan Alvarez is still young, but he's always hurt. Altuve's older, like you mentioned. So the team around them is definitely getting worse, and I don't know what it's going to hold. But the Astros still have great players, and they are capable of great things. So Alvarez is a great pick there. And just to recap the first 12 picks for everybody. So the first round went Shohei Ohtani, Aaron Judge, Jose Ramirez, Bobby Witt Jr., Ellie De La Cruz, Gunnar Henderson, Mookie Betts, Francisco Lindor, Juan Soto, Kyle Tucker, Ronald Acuna Jr., and then Yordan Alvarez. So, John, you have the first pick in the second round, which is 13th overall. Who are you going to go with?
Yeah, well, the one thing that Yordan can't do is steal bases. And so to supplement that this season, I'm going to take Tatis here. Tatis, really solid numbers this year through 100-ish games. 20-plus homers, 11, I think we had 11 stolen bases. In a full season, like, that is going to be really good. Like, he is potentially, he has potential to be a 30-30 player. I don't know if he's going to get there, but he got to 42 homers the two seasons ago, or three seasons ago, I guess, technically. And I think there's a lot of potential still on that bat. He's still very young. And coupling him with Yordan, I think, is just really solid. Really good power numbers, but it kind of makes up for the lack of steals that Yordan has. And the nice thing, too, is now outfielder really isn't an issue for this team. Yes, every other position is, which isn't great. But like we said, outfielder kind of sucks. And so being able to get two, you know, let's just call it top 10 outfielders, I think is a decent start to the draft.
Yeah, so I just want to remind everyone listening is that we are drafting this not to make a team, obviously, right? Like, we have not filled any positions that we would need to fill or anything like that. We have 100 players already each. So that's not the goal of this. This is basically to see where people would go in drafts and what you can expect in these ranges in drafts. And from what I see, I mean, having the 12th pick in a standard 12-team league, it's pretty good. I mean, your options are pretty strong, right? Like, you could have went Yordan, Tatis, Vlad, Freddie Freeman, Julio Rodriguez, Corbin Carroll, Bryce Harper, Pete Alonso. Like, there's a lot of good names out there. So you can have a really good start to your draft if you have the 12th pick. So for pick 14, this one's strange because all the names here are, like, not B tier, but they feel like the A minus tier, right? Like, after Tatis goes, it's kind of like, who do I trust more? Do I trust Freddie Freeman to get some power back? Do I trust Corbin Carroll to rebound and average? Do I trust Julio Rodriguez to not stink for the entire first half? Like, it's all a game of who would you rather. And for me, I'm going to go Corbin Carroll because I just think that speed is unmatched. I think that if you're in the first round and you take someone like, let's say, Yordan Alvarez with the 11th pick, and then you have the 14th pick, and you need speed to couple with that, just like John took Yordan, went Fernando Tatis. I think Corbin Carroll is the answer for you, because if he steals 40 bases, you're pretty set. So I'm going to go Corbin Carroll and just bank on the talent of him being a 20 home run hitter, 40-plus stolen base guy.
Yeah. Well, my next pick, I'm going to take the who's, in my opinion, is going to finish as the second-best third baseman in the game, and that's going to be Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a big Vlad guy. I've been on the podcast a lot about being a big Vlad guy. And he gets third base eligibility next season. Like, that's insane. This guy's going to have first base, third base eligibility. It more or less flips the entire position. Because a lot of the third basemen this year, like, they were solid. Don't get me wrong, right? Devers had a pretty solid season. Machado had a pretty solid season. But I just think that Vlad being third base eligible just really changes how drafts might look. And you still have the opportunity to get a pretty good slugging first baseman later in the drafts, even picking up Vlad. So, yeah, I think for me, this is kind of the no-brainer pick. I don't know if I'm ever going to take Vlad in the first round in any drafts next year. There's a good chance I might, just because I think that this season was like a clear, like, I mean, it's weird to call it a breakout season for him, but he broke out of a slump essentially. So, I'm continuing to be really high on Vlad this upcoming year.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think he's going to have first base and third base eligibility,
yes.
Which if that's the case, you could make a case for him to be in the first round. You really could. As much as I'm not a big Vlad Jr. guy, knew that going into this year, I think with that third base eligibility, like you said, it really makes him more viable everywhere because of how bad third base is. And like I said, Devers, Machado, Riley, Chisholm, they're all kind of the same player.
Yep.
And Vlad is just kind of a step above those guys. And with first base and third base, you have the freedom to take a third base later or first base later and play him wherever else. So Vlad's a great pick there. I was kind of torn between Carroll and Vlad. I was hoping he would fall to this pick, but I should have known that I was drafting with you. So for this pick, I'm kind of going to go chalk here. I think that at this point, this guy will be off the board, and that's going to be Julio Rodriguez. I just think that someone will take a chance on him around this spot right after Tatis leaves the board, and Carroll and Julio Rodriguez will kind of go back-to-back, and I think this is where he would go. So I'm not taking him because I like him. I'm taking him because I think he would go here.
Yep. I think next pick, this is where it kind of gets interesting because you start getting to the tier of like first baseman where like you kind of like them, but you don't love them.
Yeah.
And so I think this is where I go in on, and I know we've discussed it. We don't like taking pitching early, but I think this is probably where Scooble goes. Maybe even a little bit earlier in this round, but for, what is this? Fifth pick, right? In the second round?
Pick 17 overall. So yeah.
Yeah. So fifth pick in the second round. I think Scooble goes around here, and it would not be a bad decision. Like he completely deserves being the first pitcher to be taken off the board, and it makes sense for him to go this early in the second round.
Completely fair. I am probably going to reign true to my original saying where I am not going to take a pitcher in the first two rounds at all.
I agree completely.
I genuinely think I might not draft a pitcher till round like five in every draft this year, maybe even later, but definitely not in the first two rounds. I'm out on Scooble, I'm out on Skeens, but I think those two are the first two pitchers off the board for sure.
Yep.
So if you're going to take a pitcher in the first two rounds, it better be either Paul Skeens or Tarik Scooble, because I think those guys have the best chance to cash in. I think Scooble's a little bit more risky because we don't know if he's going to be able to stay healthy for an entire season because he's pitched deep into the postseason. The Tigers are relying on him. If they win against the Guardians and he has to go deeper and deeper and deeper, I just hope that arm holds up. So I'm assuming he'll be okay. But I never really like to gamble on pitchers that go deep into postseason runs because look at what happened to Zach Gallen. He went from obvious bona fide ace last year. Then he pitched deep into the postseason, into the World Series, and then this year he got hurt a little bit, had a little bit of a down year. Still good, but not the same ace-level pitcher. So I kind of tend to fade the pitchers that go deep into the postseason. So at this point, a lot of good names are off the board, and I think I'm going to take the first baseman on my team, technically. It's Freddie Freeman. I'm just going to take him, Dodgers, Mojo. I mean, with this team, I know it's just a two-team league here, but I have Ohtani, Mookie Betts, and Freddie Freeman, so I'm looking pretty good. But obviously, this is not our teams. We're just picking the first two rounds out. And I think Freddie Freeman goes in this range. I mean, the power is lacking for Freddie nowadays, but the average is still great. The team context is amazing. The RBI are going to be there. So Freddie Freeman for me in the first round, pick 18 sounds about right.
Yeah, honestly, at this point, if I see Freddie Freeman go off the board and Bryce Harper is still available, I grab him up immediately.
Smart.
I think Bryce has been a better player than Freeman, right? In the team context, they're both very similar, right? Both play for very high-powered offense teams. You know, both of them don't get steals. But Bryce has really shown up in this season, really playing really, really good baseball. The average did go down a little bit, which you don't love, but the power did go up. Of course, that's kind of just because he played more games. I'm interested to see if the steals go up, to be honest. He had 7 this year. He had 10+ the three previous seasons. So he is turning 32. He's not getting any younger. That probably means the speed isn't really coming back. But this is a Phillies team that is going to be really solid next year as well. And just to kind of get ahead of the first base run, I take Bryce Harper here.
Very, very fair. I think Bryce Harper is a great pick. I think that I maybe would favor him over Freddie Freeman in actual drafts. You know what I mean? Like, I think I would also go Bryce Harper over Freddie Freeman just because Freddie's getting older and losing that power. And Bryce Harper's still like one of the most talented players that we've seen in forever. Mm-hmm. So I'm with you on that. I think Bryce Harper should go before Freddie Freeman, but I think the general consensus is that Freddie Freeman will go before Bryce Harper.
Yeah.
For my next pick, which is 20th overall, almost rounding out the second round, this is a tough spot. I don't like this spot very much now that we just did this kind of mock where it's like, okay, if I have pick 20, that means I had what in the first round? That would be...
The fourth pick? Oh, no, sorry. It's the fifth pick, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't like the fifth pick. I'm going to say that right now. Like, fifth pick, you would have got Ellie De La Cruz or Gunnar Henderson or Mookie Betts. And those are great players and great to build off of. But this spot right here, I don't love. So this is kind of where it is based on your team need or who you want to believe in. And I am just going to go with someone that always gets the job done for me at a really bad position who I already know I will draft in the second round if the time comes. And that would be Jose Altuve.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take Jose Altuve with the 20th pick overall. And maybe that's not the right call. Maybe there is Ketel Marte or Ozzie Albies, or you pick a different second baseman. But for me, I'm always going to go with old reliable. Altuve always gets the job done. He is like a 2020 guy every year. And I'm just going to go with Altuve because I think he's one of the best at a bad position.
I'll just take Skeens next. I think he's top two pitcher, right? Like, as we've discussed, I think there's maybe a little bit more security in his makeup because Scooble's got a little bit of the injury risk, right? Skeens, we don't know about the injury risk yet until it happens. But the 133 inning sample size he had this season was amazing. I imagine like a 180 inning sample size next season is going to be just as good. And yeah, I think Skeens likely goes here, if not even a little bit earlier in some drafts.
I agree completely. And I was going to take Paul Skeens next if you didn't, just to say, hey, he should go around here if he didn't go already.
Yeah.
So I agree with you completely on that pick. For this pick, this is a toss-up, and I'm just going to go with someone who I think is going to have a bounce-back year. He had a down year this year, and I just don't think this team can be this unlucky again. I don't think any team can be this unlucky ever again.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to go with Matt Olson.
Yeah.
And that's because he can be a guy who hits 40-plus home runs, and power, what I learned this year, is hard to come by. And if you can lock down a guy who can hit 40-plus home runs, that's very, very beneficial for fantasy, especially if it's a dead-end ball, which it seemed like it was all of this year. I just think Matt Olson's a guy who can easily hit 40 home runs and have 100 RBI. But this year, he hit 29 and had 100 RBI. I mean, it was a down year, and it was still pretty good. But I just think that team overall will get better, healthier, and not have as much bad luck. So I'll go with Matt Olson with pick 22 overall.
All right, with my, I guess, last pick of this draft, technically. I don't know if he's going to go this early. I think he will, in smart drafts at least. Ketel Marte, I think, is going to go in the second round this year. We've talked about him all already. He was the best second baseman this year because Mookie was hurt. But even if Mookie was healthy, Thick Ketel would have matched him, you know, game for game. 36 homers, 93 runs, 95 RBIs. The only kind of blemish is the only 7 stolen bases. You like to have a little bit more speed. Have him maybe a bit more like Machado, where he's getting 10 in a season, but he's only had 10 plus steals twice in his career. So that's unlikely to happen. But yeah, he's the second, in my opinion, he's the second best second baseman off the board, even though you took Altuve earlier. But to get him in the second round, I think, is where you're going to have to pick up Marte this year.
I completely agree. I pick Altuve over Marte because of track record, because of team context, because we've seen Marte struggle a year after being good. I don't know how much we can trust it. I think Marte is great, and I think he deserves to be a second round pick this year. I think that the three second basemen off the board in the first two rounds will be Mookie Betts, Altuve, and Marte in some sort of direction there. Maybe I'll be sprinkled in, but I just think Marte, Altuve, and Mookie Betts are the top three second basemen by far. Yeah. And then you could throw in Albies and Semien somewhere along the line. But those three guys should go in the first two rounds. And to round out the second round with the 24th overall pick, you can go in a lot of different directions here. I could pick Zach Wheeler. I could pick Ozzie Albies. I could pick one of Trey Turner or Corey Seager. But I'm going to go with another power hitter because, like I said, it's so hard to come by power in drafts. And if you can bank a guy that can get 40-plus early, that really helps you down the line in your draft. So I'm going to go with Pete Alonso, not home bias. I think this is where he should go. And I think that if you have, let's say, the first overall pick, and you go Ohtani and then have Pete Alonso, it's a pretty good pairing. Or Aaron Judge and Pete Alonso, however you want to go about it, it's pretty good. So maybe you want to go more speed heavy if you go Judge one overall and you want to take someone like Jarren Duran maybe or Trey Turner. But if you go power all the way, I think Pete Alonso is a good final pick. So the second round went as such. It went Fernando Tatis Jr., Corbin Carroll, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. with his new third base eligibility, Julio Rodriguez, Tarik Skubal, Freddie Freeman, Bryce Harper, Jose Altuve, Paul Skeens, Matt Olson, Ketel Marte, and Pete Alonso. But that wraps up the way too early 2025 mock draft between John and myself. And that wraps up this episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. We hope that you all enjoyed and that it was beneficial to all of you for all of the awards, all of the early mock drafting. We hope you enjoyed. But before you all go, make sure you follow us on Twitter at ThisWeekPL and send us your comments and questions to our email at ThisWeekPLpod@gmail.com. You can find John on Twitter at TheJohnKe. That's THEJOHNKE. And you can follow myself on Twitter at Regicidal, REGICIDAL. Make sure you tweet at us about this podcast and let us know who you would have took in the first two rounds or who you would have switched out. Also, if you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the Pitcher List podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to your podcast on. Make sure you follow this podcast. We would greatly appreciate it. And leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy listening to the show. Lastly, sign up for Pitcher List Plus. By doing so, you can join us in the Pitcher List Discord and get advice from all of the fantasy experts and writers over there. But that wraps up this episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. For John, I'm Lee, and we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.